What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week.
Sure
and
do.
It's a weird little fifth week going on here. Not a lot of titles from DC, lots of titles from some other folks. So we got a fun mix for you. Let's kick it off with a DC title. Batman Wonder Woman Truth, number one from DC Comics. Written by Jeff Loeb, art by Jim Chung, based on the tattoo that Justin revealed.
Exactly.
So yeah.
So
I shouldn't have showed Loeb. I shouldn't have showed Loeb.
Oh, man.
I got Jeff spelled that way. That's crazy. Anyway, this is a book that takes place between Hush and Hattush and focuses on Batman's changing relationship with Catwoman, Wonder Woman confronting him about it and revealing his identity to her as Catwoman steals the lasso and they go on a little adventure in Gotham City.
Classic.
Now, there's been a lot of talk lately. Pete and I were talking about this before we got on, about Jim Lee came out and talked about the delays to Hattush. Turns out because of some health struggles he's been having, which he is dealing with, he's doing okay, which is great. But this is an interesting project to throw in the middle there. I'm curious about when this was supposed to come out in relation to Hattush, which is delayed, whether Jim Lee was supposed to do it. Regardless, this is the thing we got. So what do you guys think about it? What do you think about this issue?
I thought this was fun. I love the title. I know Justin loved the title. But cool cover.
I love the truth.
Setting a kind of a fun tone for what's inside and really delivers. You know what I mean? Like, I should have seen the Catwoman still coming, but I thought it was a fun twist. And, I like what the lasso truth represents. I like Batman being a little shy from it and all that kind of stuff. So I thought this was a cool idea and fun to also get inside people's heads. I know JT Sizzle loves that. So
you really get a dose of Batman's brain in this.
Yeah. So I thought this was a fun idea, good execution. Art's fantastic.
How would you feel about having like a rope? Just a rope is part of your general attire.
I don't know. Kind of cool, I guess.
If it did something like made people tell the truth. Yeah, who'd you lasso first? Who'd you lasso first?
Ted?
I think Ted Alex, lasso. Then you.
I want to find out what he's up to. What's up with this fourth season? I don't trust it.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't trust it.
Lasso, comma, Ted.
Not to swerve and talk about this book, but I actually thought this was pretty good. I was very pleasantly surprised by this. This is much more in line with what Jeff Loeb was doing on Superman Batman, down to the dueling narration between Batman and Wonder Woman. I thought Jim Cheung fit really nicely on the art here. The action was good. He always does good stuff. I should have looked at the credits page, but I think Alan Heinberg, who he did Young Avengers with, was involved here somewhere. Maybe is like co-plotter or something. I might be making that up. So again, I wonder about like the origin of this issue, because it's such a curious thing to be throwing out here. But it's like a nice simple character study of Batman and Wonder Woman at a very specific place and time, featuring kind of what you'd expect, a tour of like, hey, here's a bunch of Gotham City baddies. I thought it was a fun issue. I enjoyed it.
Also, Batman's still really kind of fucked up, you know.
Well, yeah, just like perennially over the past couple of decades, I agree.
Yeah, his parents died. Did you hear that?
Yeah. What? Wait, I didn't talk about that in this issue.
There were some flashbacks to it. There were some flashbacks to it.
Yeah,
not to lasso you guys a little bit, but I don't see Alan Heinberg in the credits. I am curious.
Okay, I'll take a look. Justin, go ahead. What do you think about this?
I do think this coming out now.
Justin, go ahead.
Does damage it a little bit. It's a little strange. It feels a little bit like out of time because of the like, oh, Catwoman really broke your heart. I'm like, that was so long ago in our current brains. Yes. So much has happened.
Still heartbroken over that, though.
Yes, clearly. And Batman is too, I guess.
Yeah. He hangs on to things, that Batman guy.
Alan Heinberg was credited co-storying it. I don't know if that ended up in the comic book, but that's how it was originally. So,
interesting.
Anyway, sorry.
I don't see it in the book, but I do think the art is fantastic in this. I think it's great. It gives it – it really matches – even though this is a little bit out of time, the glossiness of the art does make it feel like blockbuster comics. So it gives it a little bit more runway to be where it is. Yeah. A little more space, a little more juice, space juice. The revelation at the end of and what Wonder Woman says to Batman, I thought was interesting. I will spoil it now, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Should have said spoiler warning for everything that we're going to be talking about on the stack. Go ahead, Justin.
She says you're capable of being loved.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's a nice thing to say to somebody. I think that's a nice thing.
And you are. She asks him with the lasso around him, do you feel worthy of being loved? And then follows up with, like, I want you to know you are loved.
It's a beautiful thing to say, especially to somebody who's going through something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, particularly if this does take place in that period after a Hush with a harsher Batman than we're getting in current continuity. I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, it does feel classic Batman to him. He's very much the I'm Batman mode that we don't quite have at the current time. And that tracks to me. It sounds like it doesn't track to you, though, Justin.
Well, I guess I just wish we had more of an exploration of that, because I do think that's really interesting, especially coming off of a breakup from, like, he loved Catwoman. Yeah. I guess you could maybe say still maybe does. Still loves her. Their relationship in this issue is sort of like not really, they're together a lot, and she's just like, ha-ha, I stole from you. And I was like, what? This is about his worthiness of love and his like broken heart. It feels strange to have her there being not at all concerned with that without talking about that. I guess I just wanted more exploration of that. Mm-hmm. Especially since I do, like you're saying, Alex, I like the ideas here. Now, the lasso of truth being the center piece here that forces someone to be forthcoming with their feelings, I think is interesting.
I think what you wanted was a Tom King comic book, and what you got was a Jeff Loeb comic book. And
maybe.
because I think you're right. Like, not everything serves the
theme. Yeah, but this
is the
first issue. You really give them some time to get into that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
It's the only issue. It's a one-shot.
They're not coming back to this, yeah.
Ah, what?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Busted. Fooled by the one.
Fooled by the one. Yes.
Were you hoping? Wait, following up on that, Pete, you want this to be a series where Batman's like, I'm not worthy.
No, I want this to be a series where maybe Batman and Wonder Woman get closer.
How close?
What?
How close, Pete?
What are you talking about?
I'm just saying that, like, he's, you know, clearly still struggling with a lot of stuff, and she seems to be kind of keyed into that, which is nice. And, you know, his bat family he pushes away. If somebody's got, like, a kind of a way for him to kind of talk, maybe it would be helpful.
Oh, like, close emotionally, not sexually. Is what
yes.
Oh, okay. Seemed like you were saying sexually.
No, that's your own shit you put on stuff, you perv.
I'm sorry. It's very perverted of me to think two comic book characters would hook up, particularly when they have on screen before. You're right. My apologies. Why don't we talk about The Ultimates, number 23 from Marvel, written by Dennis Cabb, art by Stephen Morion. We're getting down to it. This is the penultimate issue of The Ultimates, and we've turned the lens to Asgard, where Ragnarok is happening. Beautiful issue. Beautiful, beautiful issue.
Yeah. Hey, Justin. How you feeling, bro? You still camping or what's up?
I'm camping. I mean, here's the thing. We're in the middle of this endgame that feels so weird. And this issue is sort of like doing its whole own thing over there,
it's like
which
a picture
feels
book.
Crazy. Yeah. And, you know, it builds towards something. But I feel like Dennis Camp is just like, well, I'm going to keep doing wheelies over here while this story is unfolding. And it's not really telling a maxi story. He's just, like, shooting off in directions, making great comics. And so, like, I like this issue a lot. I think it's great. But, poking into the back of my brain is like, what is this crossover?
Well, the thing that weirds me out about this one is it is so literally physically removed from everything that's going on Earth, where to the point they're like, we're in Asgard. What has the Maker done to us here? And I'm like, I don't know. We spent a little time here, but how did he get over there? Everything's going down on Earth. And the previous issues, which have focused in on different team members of the Ultimates, at the same time, it felt like they're building something. Like, they are all offshoots of this main big story, and we're getting information about the greater world at the same time. Asgard has been such a minor part of all of this that this to me felt like it could have been a mainstream Thor story or a one-off, and
yes,
I wouldn't have blinked. And as that, it is, like I said, gorgeous to look at. The strip in Morian art is mostly full-page splashes. It's beautifully colored throughout, but the story is a little hard to hold.
It's all cover pages. It's almost just really just one panel, just really
you gotta love impressive. That. Just nonstop covers, man.
I loved it. Yeah, it just sucked that there were words I had to read. I was like, oh man, this would have been so much better if it was just all like covers like this.
Because you know, what I was thinking about this the other day. Do you know what I think you want to be reading, Pete? Is they sell this stuff at Staples. It's like reams of 500 blank pages, no words, no story. Mm. You can just like look at it.
A lot of potential on those.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I'll just stare at the wall. Thanks. I just think
like
that
the Kingpin.
The art here is so impressive. I mean, the look and character design of Thor and Loki in this is so fun. It's such a cool take on these characters. We don't kind of get to see them as grizzled as this. So, yeah, I just think this is such a well-executed, from an art perspective, idea. And, yeah, felt ultimate to me.
Penultimate. We'll see what the Ultimate Ultimates is like. The Sacrificers, number 21 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Max Fumara. This is the ultimate issue of this book, wrapping up the series as Bird Boy and his little bird children try to save Sun Lady from other Bird Lady.
What, dude? Don't disrespect this comic like this. This has been amazing. Come on, man.
No, this has been a fantastic run, and here we finally see what happens with Pigeon, who has been trying to save the world and stopped at every turn. He breaks here, and he decides that's it. He was going to become the thing that he's been fighting against all along. But, as usual with this sort of Rick Remender story, even though it gets very nihilistic and very dark, there is a ray of sunshine by the end of the issue, which I appreciated. Justin, you've been pretty high on this all along. What'd you think?
I love this series. Wasted. And I love what Rick Remender does with his stories. I talked about this a little bit on the live show, and I feel like he really sort of paid it off here. He always has one last turn at the end where it's like, that speaks to the theme and shows the true colors of the protagonist. And in this, it's our main character who fought for the first half of this series to take down pure evil, what he saw as pure evil. And then in this issue, he literally does it. He becomes it to try to save his family. And then he then has to remove himself and return to his roots and sort of start over and finds joy in that. And I really like that he shows the character being like the ultimate hypocrite, which is, you know, something I think we frown on in general, especially in our stories. Yet he doesn't judge him for it. He's just like, this is what happened. And there's a clear progression for why he made these choices. And it leads him to this final place where he can be beyond the notions of good and evil here and be in a new frontier space. And I don't know, that just really resonated with me. That whole idea was very cool.
Yeah, I mean, Remender is such an amazing writer. These stories are so unique and cool, and I never know what's going to happen to the characters or what is going to kind of go down. Nothing is safe, so there is such a kind of fun feeling when you're reading a Remender book. But this was, the art here is just super tight bananas. I mean, this is just really impressive. The expressions that you have on a bird is really just, it feels so human and so special. I was really blown away by this, not only story, but the immaculate art throughout this. This is a hell of a run, and they really landed it in this last issue.
Sounds like you had a hard time approaching the birdness of this comic.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
You hate birds because you love cats.
I don't know about all that, but I just it's not about birds. You know what I mean?
If it was a bird, if it was a cat character instead of a bird character, how would you feel about this book, Pete?
Well, I just think it's you can put any animal in there. It's about the kind of humanity of life, you know?
I mean, if you could just sub characters around, then what does it even matter? You know, like Superman could be a dog or whatever. I don't even know. Main takeaway from this book that I thought they really nailed at the end here was the idea that we always do need to sacrifice to bring about the world we think we want. But what often happens when you're old is you build and build and build, you watch it all be wrecked and torn down, and then decide to tear it down yourself. That's something that we're seeing now, as a bunch of people at the end of their life tearing down the entire world because they don't care and they've reached the end of their life. But the really hopeful note that I think he left us on is it is ultimately up to trusting youth to repair the world. Will it go all the way? Will they make the same mistakes? Almost definitely. Will sacrifices happen along the way? Absolutely. But that's how it has to happen anyway. The impetuousness of youth will save us, but ultimately when it becomes old, it will destroy us, and that cycle will begin again. And I think that does actually come through in the cover, which has this circle, shows the whole cycle of the sun and the moon through one of the characters. So really, I thought this whole thing was really beautifully done, and I was very happy to see this last issue.
Yes. Another, it's his composition, the way he just like, the pacing of his stories, like, and he's just looking at his whole career, like, he did his time in the, at the big companies, and then I feel like he perfected the craft, and then he hung his own shingle, and is just making these just excellent comic book stories that are stories he wants to tell with his points, with the best artists that he knows. It's hard to think of a better way to do this.
Yeah, this is a sick shingle he's hung. You're right, Justin.
It's a great shingle.
Great shingle, man. The highest honor we can give here on the show, great shingle. Justice League Intergalactic Special number 1 from DC Comics, written by Jadzia Axelrod and Nicole Maines, art by Travis Moore. The idea of this one shot is that Galaxy has joined the Justice League. Dreamer is still on the outs with the Justice League, but is drawn into a conflict with them anyway to save her home planet. This is going to lead into the 4-week Pride Month event that's going to come out weekly, called Dream Girls, that stars Dreamer and Galaxy and replaces the usual one-shot anthology. So we're almost getting like 5 issues of this thing, which I think is pretty cool. But what did you think about this kickoff here?
It was fun. I liked the All Right You Skank entrance. I thought that was awesome. I thought this was a, you know, fun use of these characters, interesting story, a lot of fun kind of twists and turns, really kind of leaned into the characters in a good way. I enjoyed this.
I just feel like Dreamer's a great character, and the stories that are built around Dreamer as the protagonist feel like some of the more like interesting places. I mean, DC's just been crushing it in general, but they're able to like bring together like people like Adam Strange, Green Arrow, to do this, to have just a great adventure. And I love that this is going to be kicking into something else, because this is the kind of storytelling I feel like was in comics where it feels a little less, it's not building towards some massive event. It just feels like good, solid, unique comic book storytelling.
Yeah, and also, like, I felt like some of the panels had, like, an old-school kind of vibe to them, which was kind of cool. Maybe that was just me.
No, I mean, I think this very much feels more in line with, like, 80s-style comic books. It's pretty dense in terms of the narration and dialogue that's going on, but it's solid dialogue. I think the best part of this about this book, it maybe even less than the plot, which is fun, and the action, which is solid, is the character work. Like, the one-on-one scenes are very good. Like, there's a great scene here where Dreamer sits down with Green Arrow, who I question why he is on a Justice League Intergalactic team, but kind of not necessarily deep continuity thing, but a lot of things have happened since. Green Arrow is the one who betrayed and saved everybody through absolute power. Dreamer was the one who betrayed everybody and then saved Superman by killing herself before coming back. And she's questioning, like, why is Green Arrow good with everybody and why am I still on the outs? And I like that. Like, the uncomfortableness of that
she's
scene
right.
I thought was...
Everybody should be upset
and
still at Green Arrow.
Really, no, that's not what I'm getting
at. No, that's not the
point.
And
it's very good. No, also, everything with Galaxy dealing with her rage issues I thought was really fascinating as well. Because you don't usually get to see that nowadays with a character. See one really losing it and not necessarily going into villainy, but being like, that's enough. Just like, I can't take this anymore. Having to see them pull her back from the brink there, I thought was nice as well. So excited to see these two characters paired going forward. Jazzy Axelrod, Nicole Maines doing a great job with this. Should be a lot of fun.
Really like this.
Yeah. Planet She-Hulk number 6 from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips.
Red
art
She-Hulk?
By Emilia Laser. That would be crazy. A Red She-Hulk?
Not possible.
What?
What? Your scientists, etc. Art by Emilia Laso and Aaron Cooter. This is the final issue of this book.
Cool cover.
Part of a whole intergalactic cosmic relaunch that there's been a lot of talk about. This did not go as planned. I think we could probably
bit
say
of
that.
A bit of fizzle.
This, I think the three of us agree, was one of the best books out of that launch.
Definitely.
But this issue very much, to me, feels like Stephanie Phillips probably had at least 6 more issues of story in this, and then thankfully got to wrap it up, but like jammed it all into this last issue here. So how do you feel about how it wrapped up? How'd you feel about this final issue?
It's super bummed that this is the way it went, because I was really just into this story. It felt like such a smart sequel to Planet Hulk and a way of giving She-Hulk such a cool thing. We had Jack of Hearts up there as well, so we were seeing payoff on that story. This issue, you can feel the, like, I had so much more to tell you.
Yeah.
It's very, like, a little bit of winky writing here that I actually liked. It felt justified. Of her being like, you would have loved this story over and over again.
Yeah,
the narrator keeps saying,
It's heartbreaking.
That's a bummer, but I like where she all gets. There's some fun things happening that have real, that make this story important to the continuity of She-Hulk. I feel like it's such a missed opportunity that we didn't get to see this story, because we're not going to go back here.
You know? Yeah, that's sad. I completely agree. I just felt like Stephanie Phillips did such a great job. This is such a great idea. I would have loved to have seen more of this. And also, I was just happy, too, that she does end up with the Jack of Hearts at the end of this, which is exciting. We don't know why, but I was so happy with this. It stinks that it didn't sell enough to keep this going, because I think this was such a cool, well-executed idea.
On the other hand, I mean, I don't know.
The art's great. I'm sorry.
The art is also great. I don't know what they're going to do off this, but most of this is spent on Earth with one of the characters coming back to tell She-Hulk what's been going on and sort of download her on everything. I thought this was the funniest issue of the book so far, and if they do let Stephanie Phillips continue, I would love to see her do an Earthbound She-Hulk story, because clearly she's got the chops to do that. The courtroom scene at the beginning is a lot of fun. The rest of it is very fun throughout. So she clearly did have this big gladiator story mirroring what Greg Pak did with Planet Hulk, but she could write other things. So there you go.
Yeah.
Truth.
Red Roots, number 1 from Image Comics by Lorenzo DeFelici. I'll just come out and say this to me was the most unexpected issue of the week. Blew my mind a little bit, because I did not know what was going on, but I was enraptured at every single page. I still don't know what's going on in the end, maybe even less than what I started.
Oh, boy.
But I desperately want to read the second issue of this to... I hesitate to even lay out exactly what it is, but I'll tell you there's
I don't think we should.
I'll just lay out that there's like 2 stories going on at the same time. One is about this unstoppable John Wick-esque killer, and the other one is about a woman who finds a head in her house.
She's a teacher, a regular.
Yeah, she's a regular woman, regular finds person. Severed head in her house.
You don't know. Maybe she's regular. You don't
Again,
know.
I kind of, like, the joy of this book is being like, what is happening as you're reading it? And, man, it just gets wilder and wilder until the last page. This is great, plus incredible art from DeFelici as well.
Yeah.
I'm all in on this one.
I mean, I agree with you completely about everything you said. And it's crazy that it's we're cutting back and forth, like hard cuts between these 2 different characters and their very different lives. And man, this story doesn't give an inch. It doesn't point, like, it's no winking here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what do you think is happening? And I don't know. But I'm so in. I'm so
Did
in.
You read the back matter, the page from Lorenzo Di Felici at the end, where he talks about, where he's like, man, I had these two different ideas for a while. And then I was like, what if they were a third idea?
Which I'm like, how dare you? Don't fuck with me twice. You fuck with me with the story. And then in the back matter, he's like, you think you don't know what I'm talking about? I didn't either until I did. And I was like, what?
Yes, this is a very ballsy first issue. Like, it's definitely like really putting himself out there, confident. Absolutely,
I think
Pete, what'd you think?
Yeah, the cover really sets an amazing tone of creepy confusion, and but it's such a good start. Like, you're like, okay, yeah, all right, yeah, I'm rolling with this lady. What's oh no. The heads are just showing up everywhere. What is going on? You know, so I think they do a good job of like giving you enough to kind of like pull you in. And it's not just like insanity from the jump where you're just like, oh, I don't know who to root for or what's going on. But man, they walk the line in such a great way. But this is scaring the crap out of me for sure.
Interesting.
You're scared? Because you don't know. The unknown is scaring you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Also, man. Head start showing up, dude, I'm out.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You live in the country where that does happen.
Dude, constantly.
Talking about. It happens more in the city than it happens in the country.
No, the city, you're there's walking people. Along and there's like one of them wheelbarrows full of heads you always
what
see
are
in
you
the country.
Talking about?
You know what I'm talking
always
about.
See.
Always see.
Pete, no. You're scared of the unknown. You're surrounded by unknown. It's dark everywhere around your house. I assume I've never been invited, but it seems scary. There's got to be.
Always
who
welcome,
knows
buddy.
Who lurking,
always welcome.
Lurking
yeah,
around.
You go to that
give me,
well
gotta give me the address.
You shout down and they throw you up food and like sometimes they throw you a head. You don't even know what's going on. Just to mention about this book, we obviously didn't say much about it. This is just one that I highly recommend. Don't read anything about it. Pick it up. Get into it. Get on board because people are going to be obsessed. Next up, it's been a long time coming, but Swamp Thing,
hey,
1989, number one from DC Comics, written by Rick Veitch, art by Michael Zulli and Vince Locke. We talked to Rick Veitch about this on our podcast a couple of months back about the genesis of this. This was a title that originally was supposed to come out as Swamp Thing 88 back in 1989, but because it had a cover depicting Swamp Thing as crucifix, if I remember correctly.
Being crucified. Having been crucified.
It got shut down, and Rick Veitch never got to release the final four issues of his Swamp Thing run. Now they're coming out in quote-unquote facsimile editions, complete with vintage ads and back matter and teasers
letters
for
page,
storylines you definitely forgot existed back in 1989. I thought this was great. Like, this is just an incredible package from front to back. I honestly did not read much of Swamp Thing back in the day, but I think you can jump right in with this. This is a very surprising story of the intersection of Swamp Thing, Jesus, and the demon Etrigan. The Jesus and the demon. Jesus also talks in rhyme, if I remember correctly.
Nope.
And the one thing I do know is the arc was all about Etrigan's origin before this.
Origin.
So this is finishing that up. But what
finishing,
did you guys think?
I really enjoyed this as well. Like, I didn't find this to be very controversial. Like,
no.
This is a story like depicting the story of Jesus pretty straightforward, in a straightforward way. So it's not like undercutting or trying to like be quote unquote blasphemous, which is why I would imagine it got pulled. So like, it's a bummer this was never able to come out, but this resonates today. I think this story really works. I like the classic art on it. The character of Swamp Thing, for whatever reason, became a lightning rod for telling much bigger stories, bigger human stories. Alan Moore sort of opened the door, and Swamp Thing became this way of exploring human experience, and this is what that is. It's cool. It's definitely not something that you need to be scared to read because you're going to see something that is bad, just if that's your thing.
Yeah, I was surprised at how tripped out and religious this was. It gets religious super fast, but the art is absolutely amazing. It's a very interesting story, one of a kind for sure, and the letter page and all the kind of fun stuff is great.
Yeah, and I'll also mention this is, I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but this is the last title that Michael Zulli started drawing before he passed away. It got finished by Vince Locke, hence the double credits. So it's great that DC is putting this out. This is such a cool project.
Did you mention our interview with Rick?
I did. Because, I did.
Yeah, that is such a great way to just hear more about this.
And I'll also mention the back matter. There's a long note from Stephen Bissett, who we also interviewed about something entirely different, but he has a really fascinating perspective on stuff as well. And he definitely backs up what you were saying in that note, Justin, where he's like, I don't think there's anything controversial about this. What were they doing?
No. And honestly, it's honoring the Christ story in a way that I'm like, hey, religious people, maybe you want younger people to read this. If you like what you're doing in church, you should have kids get into the moralistic nature of your religious mythology.
Yeah. Hey, kids, you know who else was a Swamp Thing back in the day? Jesus.
Yes.
Captain America number 10 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Valerio Sheedy. Ooh, we are walking that road to Armageddon. And in this issue, Captain America is battling Salvation, the guy who has taken over Latveria. Meanwhile, Nick Fury and his new S.H.I.E.L.D. are facing some hard times, is I think the way you could probably put it. And Red Hulk is lurking just around the corner, ready to invade. What do you mean, spoilers?
What this is.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
That was kind of the big reveal at the end of the issue there.
No, they've already talked about 3 months in advance that Red Hulk has taken over Latveria. That's the kickoff to Avengers Armageddon. So it's not a spoiler. It's part of the advertising material.
Now, but talking about that, like, what do we think, including the preview stuff that we've seen in the solicits, like, this event is about politics, sort of weapons of mass destruction being heroes and villains and all of that. Mm-hmm. Is this feels like it's a little bit like DC KO, but more political, like where we're establishing weapons, a bunch of weapons. And I'm reading this alongside the Wolverine issue that we're going to talk about a little bit later on, Weapons of Armageddon, where it feels like they're just putting pieces on the table to have them literally smash into each other for the future of Marvel world politics, right?
It's a lot of Marvel. It definitely is a lot of Marvel world politics. And that's something we've been getting since One World Under Doom, which I'll remind people ran over the course of 10 or 11 months. So that was a very long event. And that was all about Latverian politics. And now we're dealing with more Latverian politics. And Avengers Armageddon will also be about Latverian politics. And if I was to predict something based on timing, given this is all running into Avengers Doomsday hitting theaters, I think after Avengers Armageddon is done, we're going to get some Latverian politics, which is a lot, I would say. I'm just going to say that's a lot.
What do you mean by a lot, though?
Too much. It's too much Latveria. Is what I'm saying. It's too much Latveria. It's also, I do think Chip Zdarsky is working this thing about, like, what America means. Granted, obviously, like, that fits in Captain America. But I do think that's played into what his plot line has been running through with Red Hulk. I think that also plays into a title we're going to talk about later in the stack. So maybe there's a level of dealing with the 250th anniversary of America and what that means in the spirit of America. And maybe that's what Marvel is pushing here. Certainly they're doing that through their whole 1776 miniseries. They also have a red, white, and blue variant cover program. So I wonder if that's a undertone as well.
Well, but it's interesting because, like, this doesn't feel, I guess it's about America in a way, but it feels exclusively about Latveria so far.
Isn't Latveria America in a way?
Wow, interesting. Wow. No, I think very decisively no. Maybe Red Hulk's going to say that exact line at some point. But I don't know.
I'm Latverian.
Yeah. So these are our highbrow complaints. Here's my lowbrow complaint. All the characters look a little alike in this
guy. Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
And this and the Wolverine, I'm like, yo, there's a lot of white dudes I'm good at fighting.
Dudes. I mean, is not a white blonde dude, but, like, I complained about this last issue. This issue, Captain America is like, Joe Rogers or whatever your name is, you're the best of them. And I was like, I still don't know who this guy is. Oh, why? Wow. Why? What is going on here?
Oh, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, I think it's a fun cover with Cap on a horse here. I mean, we're kind of We didn't talk about Cap on a horse. I thought that was
I love Cap getting horsed. This dude has had a lot going on. He needs to get a great time to bring horsed. Up.
Head to comicbookclub.threadless.com for our Get Horsed t-shirt, which is a real thing that we have on there.
We're pushing the T's, guys, because it's summer coming, and you want to have an almost nonsensical quote.
Show off those guns, and people be like, huh?
Get horsed. Yeah.
I mean, getting horse is a fun idea that we could all just celebrate, even if we don't know what it means.
This is all a little serious. I did like Salvation. I wish there was a little more to him.
Yes,
but
agreed.
He's cool, flying around, shooting lightning out of his fake Doom armor. That's fun stuff. Yeah. And I like the twist at the end here. This points to something more interesting, potentially. That's all.
Well, cool. And the ideas that I think the issue is like we're sneaking up on these big ideas, and I want to get to them a little bit. Where like it feels like we're approaching mutually assured destruction. People that have interests that are beyond good and evil, that are state interests, moral interests. Captain America switching sides, going against America in a way.
No,
like there's a lot of ideas here, but I think we need like a capital I idea at the center of this now.
Can I throw something out? And this is a personal thing, maybe. I'm sure at least Pete disagrees about this, but I'm really not interested in Red Hulk as a character or a villain.
Really?
I don't know. He does nothing for me. And I do wonder if it was because of the Captain America movie that happened a year ago that kind of flopped, that they were like, people are going to be all in on Red Hulk, put them at the center of our plans. And then they were like, oh, no. And now they're just sort of headed down this hill with Captain America versus Red Hulk, a thing that people don't actually really care about.
But what if Red Hulk was on a horse?
I mean, is it a red horse? Because sign me up.
All right. Now we're talking.
The thing is, I really liked the Red Hulk Doom, One World Under Doom stuff. Like
that was a good series.
It was a good series.
I'm not saying everything about the Red Hulk is bad. It's okay, just... Good. he's not going to hear. It's just there's nothing interesting about the character. He's mainly defined by his mustache, and he doesn't even have that anymore. So there you go.
Wow.
I hate Fairyland and comics. Number 50 from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Derek Kaufman and Scotty Young. 50 fantastic issues of this book. We had Scotty Young on the show a couple of weeks back, and he talked about how excited he was about this. And now it's finally here. Big spoilers for the end. This is the last issue of I Hate Fairyland, for a while. They're taking a little break to recharge the engines, which was a big surprise there. But before they go, they've got a couple of mashup parodies featuring Gert. What'd you guys think about this one?
The Absolute parody was really fun. I thought that was cool.
I like this format. It was just a fun issue jumping around. Like I like both when we talk to Scotty and in the back matter here. He's like, you know, this is my improv comic. I want to just chase the ideas that are the most exciting, follow the fun, to use a term that I heard Pete mumble to a class of 22-year-olds at one point who were paying a fortune for him hearing him say that. but you could really feel in this comic. And then the surprise at the end was like a bit of a gut punch. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good fun winking stuff. Putting Scotty Young in there as well. I love how he draws himself too.
Yeah.
So this is a delight. I do hope they take as long as they need. They do come back because this is a fun title to have on the stands.
Yeah.
Zatanna, number one from DC Comics by Jamal Campbell. This is a new Next Level series focusing on Zatanna. It is connected but different from the miniseries that Jamal Campbell did a while back. Here, Zatanna has decided she wants to become Prime Magus. To do that, she goes through a bunch of magical adventures.
Well, I, you know, the last time I got excited about a number one on the stack, you told me that was the only issue. So I'm hoping for more of this, and hopefully it's not the only issue. But I thought this was really cool, interesting villain, great art, fun action. Yeah, it's tripped out in all the great ways, and it's kind of great look at magic. So, yeah, I was impressed with this. So
I don't know how to tell you this, but this comic doesn't even exist. This never came out.
I was going to make the same joke. was like, this issue vanishes in 3, 2. Pete, look at it real quick. 1, 0. It's gone. Sorry, it's gone.
Oh, man.
What'd you think, Justin?
I like this. I mean, Zatanna, I feel like everyone's like, let's do some Zatanna. Like, yeah. In the last year in DC, it's like, give us a number one, focus on Zatanna. So we're in a Zatanna renaissance right now. But each one feels different. Yeah. And this one, giving her like a strong directive rather than have her stumbling into something, I think is nice. The agency feels a little bit different than some of the other stuff we've seen. I think the art also separates it. It feels a little like Vegas-y almost. Like there's a little bit of a gloss that feels like a veneer in a way that works with the storytelling.
It's a beautiful, beautiful issue. I did find the storytelling a little obtuse. It was hard to tell exactly what was going on at certain points as it jumped from thing to thing. But, you know, let Jamal Campbell do his thing. Let him run with it. I'm happy to see him go. Predator Bloodshed, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jordan Morris, art by Ruari Coleman and Roland Boski. We had Jordan on the show a couple of weeks back.
Yep.
So check out that chat about Predator Bloodshed and the other great work that he's doing at Marvel. The idea of this book is basically, what if Mortal Kombat, but the Predator was in it? In the Marvel Universe, Marvel Universe doesn't really play into it too much, but it is a death tournament with a bunch of people with enhancements who have been invaded by a Predator. And this issue, they got to do what you do in most Predator movies, team up with the Predator to take down the bigger bad guy. This is just firing on all cylinders. It's hitting all the notes you want to hit from something like this. Fun characters, great art. I'm having a blast.
I love the class warfare nature of this, where it's going to be like all these people who are like, the healthcare system fucked me. Now I got to fight my way out. I feel like the Predator's going to be like, brother, I hear you. I'm still paying for my claw tech. Yeah. Invisibleness.
It's
down payment.
It's a little this issue. It came into focus that it's a little more like Mortal Kombat via Squid Game is kind of.
I felt like it was Running Man meets Predator a little bit.
It's all of those things in a soup, which is everybody's favorite thing.
Ooh, a turtle soup.
Especially summer coming, everyone loves a hot soup. Alex pushing the soup. Pete pushing turtle soup, famously Shredder's favorite.
Oh,
Pete?
Hey.
Pete, whose side are you on? I feel like you've always been a turtle guy, but maybe you're more of you're siding with the man and
I'm going to eat some turtle soup tonight.
Is that Krang? Who are you doing?
I think it was Krang.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember what Shredder sounded like, and I couldn't do it.
It's a lot deeper and scarier. Jesus.
Just a question for you in the Krang-Shredder relationship.
Yeah.
The fact that Krang was a brain, do you think the Shredder had to chew up his soups, his turtle soups, and spit them directly onto his like cranial skin?
No, that would be a rock steady bebop kind of job. You know,
baby,
what I mean?
Bird me, Shredder.
Oh my god, I wouldn't
trust Bebop to chew my food.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust him to do anything.
Rock steady?
But I thought this was, if I could get back to this comic a little bit, I really felt like this, seeing the Predator kind of team up was really cool. And that kind of whole kind of beat where they were kind of all doing the same thing was a neat, you don't usually see that in a Predator book. So I thought that was a fun twist. It seems like they're really having fun with this. I feel like this is a tight package. The art, storytelling, really working together in such a cool way. I am very much enjoyed it.
Pete, which turtle would taste the best in the soup?
Wow, that's a horrible question.
Probably Raphael because of all the rude.
Yeah, you think the rudeness makes it taste better? He's probably soaking in the grease. Like,
I mean, Michelangelo
definitely eats the most pizza.
Mikey eats the most pizza. Mikey would be the most delicious. Absolutely.
When they order a pizza, they don't go 2 each? You think they're eating two slices each? And does Splinter eat pizza? I don't remember.
Yeah, they all eat pizza, man, and they eat a lot of pizza, so it's more than 2 slices each. Who eats 2 slices and that's it?
Well, they're splitting a pie 4 ways.
Yeah, how many pies do they usually order?
They order a lot of pies, man.
Do you think they're ordering their 2 at a time?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they ever established, like, what the pizza place thinks, sliding the pizzas into the sewer grate?
No, they haven't covered that.
It's untapped territory. The first time they looked at that little...
Pete, we're trying to connect with you about your favorite thing. You're so mad. We're just trying to be like, how did it
trying
work?
To talk to you, Pete.
Oh, my God.
Your schoolwork has been going down. You haven't been talking to your friends. You've been in your room all day.
I want to wrap
Let's move on to Wrestle Heist.
I want to wrap this truth lasso around you and ask you. And I want to tell you that, Pete, you're loved by Shredder or whoever you like now.
We love you, Pete.
All right, Wrestle Ice number 5 from Image Comics. Yay. By Kyle Starks. This is the final issue of this title, about a bunch of washed-up wrestlers who pull off the heist of the century to get revenge on the promoter who worked against them and ruined their careers. This was just a great series from front to back. So funny, so smartly done. Great heist comics as well. Very twisty, very turny. Wraps up very nicely. And just, you know, we mentioned this with every issue, but like Kyle put a bunch of back matter in there with like fake ads, but also interviews with comic book professionals about their favorite wrestlers, little articles and things. It's just, it's a blast. And he talks about at the end of this book how he didn't sell really well. And so he wanted to do a sequel, but he can't unless the trade sells well, which
I love that.
I do love that. Like, that's exactly, we had like a 2-hour long conversation with him a couple of weeks back about Wrestle Heist and other things. And he was very honest about this stuff. He's like, I can't do it. If I don't make the money from it, I can't do it. So go buy the trade of this, please. It is absolutely worth it.
Buy the trade. So it'll read really well in a trade because of the progression of the heist. I mean, it's rare when you see like a book that is equal parts wrestle and heist. Both sides of this are given the most love throughout. All the way down to the very last page, which I thought was such a great payoff to both the W and H of the title. Mm-hmm. Great book. Go pick it up, because Kyle needs to be back here making more of this. This is great to see his art as well, which we don't always get to see.
Yeah, this is a great comic, great ending, worth it. All 5 issues really just do so well. Amazing art. This is a total package. And what a fun time and fun back matter. All this just really hits.
The Exorcism at Buckingham Palace, number 2 from IDW, written by Hannah Rose May, art by Kelsey Ramsey. This is a sequel series to The Exorcism at 1600 Penn. Now, across the pond, as the heir apparent to the throne is beset by demons himself, as established in this issue, he is in fact possessed by a demon and needs to be exorcised, leading to the frankly hilarious paddle where somebody says, it's time for a exorcism at Buckingham Palace.
We need an exorcism, isn't it? Huh? Mike?
Oh, God, what are you doing?
We need exorcism.
What did you guys think about this? What did you think about the second issue?
This is scary as fuck, man.
Which part? Like being part of a monarchy?
Or just a family in general?
Both those things. But also just the art, the tone of it, the kind of dark shadows and creepy factor that kind of, I think they do such a great job artistically of kind of setting such a creepy tone. And then the big kind of action words that are so bright make you kind of jump in your seat a little bit. So, I was super impressed with the art, but man, this scares the crap out of me.
I also like, I speaking to the art, like the sort of swirling blackness that is the demon, it's gathering throughout the issue, was really nice. I liked that, taking the spooky tone in a very different way from the last one. I feel like it didn't quite present the same way. I like the connection point back to the American exorcism. There's the Alex, you highlighted the call. Mm-hmm. But it's before that very expositional line, the person's like, you know, we actually had an exorcism in at the 1600 Penn. And I think now it's time you did that, which I was like, wow. Because we talked about it the first issue, like, oh, this feels so different and unconnected. And they really spit in our face on that point.
I would love it. Next issue, they should just start listing other IDW titles. Be like, this is really a quiet place before the storm warning. Don't forget to smile for the camera.
No, that's called building a brand, guys. But yeah. I do like the family. We talked about the politics of Captain America. I think the politics in this comic are actually really working.
Yes.
Like I really like the family aspect, as well as the, like, oh, do we have to start a world war over this? Like, that stuff is really balancing out the just general demonic, like, the demonic tension that's building throughout this. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice, because that's also tension in a very different way.
Well, and also the metaphor works really nicely here about the idea that the British royal family has literal demons behind them rather than just figurative demons. So it gives it a different flavor. It feels very different from the previous series. And like Pete said, it is scary. I actually thought the art was even better in this issue than it was in the previous issue. I like the design of the new demon. It's very Lovecraft infused, which is cool. I'm excited to see how this wraps up. The Punisher, number 3 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Jose Luis Soares. The Punisher is dealing with a big problem, which anytime he does violence, his head really hurts. And we find out why in this issue. Well, meanwhile, Jigsaw keeps ripping people's faces off and putting their faces on his face in a face-off scenario. Now, Pete, just to jump ahead of it a little bit, you always say cool cover and don't describe it. I do want to talk about this cover for a second, because it has the Punisher in full costume pointing at a dead zombie Punisher who's popping out of a grave that says Frank Castle, and he's terrified and the moon's in the background. That doesn't happen anywhere in the book, and that's a real bummer. So bummer
this is
cover,
a great
man.
Cover.
It is a very cool cover.
It's a cool cover, but it has nothing to do with what's on the inside. And the inside, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I don't know who this is for or what. No, Frank putting pills on a hot dog. I mean, what are we doing?
Have you ever tried it? Don't knock it until you try it.
That's how they take their medicine.
Cool.
Yeah.
I run
it through the pharmacy.
I love my medication hot dog style. I just think that this took some dark turns and did some weird stuff. And I was like, hey, I don't know. You know, sometimes you like a character and they do stuff that isn't for you, and that you got to be okay with that. You know, you got to be like, hey, this is for somebody else and it's not for me.
Yeah, give me a chili cheese dog. Go heavy on the Benadryl.
Yeah, I have such a headache. Give me a cheese dog with Advil.
Also, the microchip designing a shotgun shell so he could shoot himself. I was like, what are we doing?
There's some straight wild stuff going on. Yeah. And this is
wild
far
stallions.
Away. Yes, wild stallions truly do rule. In this, the Punisher is a little bit unrecognizable, and I do, getting back to the cover, wish we had the guy on the cover in here a little bit. Honestly, maybe that's the
I wonder if that's Jigsaw on the cover.
No, I think it's more of a metaphor that Frank is shooting the past that's haunting him forever. He goes to the park where his family died and just lays there and gets cozy in the grass.
He's also really bummed out when he's impaling this guy on a fence and like killing some other people and breaking their hands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see where this goes after this arc, honestly, because this feels like a leftover arc from the Red Band series where they still have to wrap up some stuff. So what is next? I want to see, like, Benjamin Percy has the screwed up personality.
He's dead.
I don't know
if you can come back from shooting yourself with a shotgun.
No, it was like Matrix shooting yourself in the head type thing.
That was very much like he's shooting the programming out.
We saw the bottom of his head coming through the top. I don't know if you can come back
from
that.
But then microchips came out, which, as we all know, is not what's in our brains.
Even if you shoot yourself with microchips, you're still shooting something through your head. I don't think you can survive that.
I think that was more of a metaphorical shotgun blast of metaphor. I do think, like, the Punisher's due for a reset. There's just too much, like, detritus around him from the brain injuries and Jigsaw. And just in this issue, he's just randomly walking the streets being like, would you say you're robbing this hot dog stand? Dead. Like, I'm like, no. Like, that's not what I don't think we want that from the Punisher, right?
No.
Also, this is his first time taking medication. You shouldn't be taking that many pills at once, bro.
Heavy duty. Yeah. And he's just like taking street pill style.
You take like one and then you wait 5 hours and then see how you're doing, then take another one. You know what I mean? Like, Jesus.
No. You put them all on one hot dog bun and go to town. Oh, my God.
That's the way I do it. Yeah.
Can't eat just one.
I also think there's something to the core Punisher where he was a meticulous killer. He was someone who would like study his target, really see that they were evil. He wrote in a journal a lot, which I love him journaling.
It's important to journal, man.
And that's the kind of stuff that I think makes the Punisher much more palatable from a heroic point of view, where he is like being like, this person is bad. The idea that the last couple of years the Punisher has been like so crazy with killing that we don't even like, he kills like 9 people in this comic in a one panel sequence. I'm like, this isn't what I.
Well, and Microchip's like, you should have killed more, Frank.
Yeah, I know.
You're not killing enough people. Got to kill more people, Frank.
And he kills a dude. So to fill out the hot dog pill story, if you're not going to read this. A dude is robbing a hot dog stand, which, what is that, $6? $7?
Maybe.
He's like, what's in the till? I was like, till? It's a hot dog stand. He's got like a wad of bills in his apron. And then he kills the robber, and then the hot dog stand guy's hair is a hot dog, and he literally dumps his pill case on it. It's just, we're too far out.
Before we move on to the next one, this is a tonal swerve, but I thought it was a good opportunity to mention this. Earlier this week, actually yesterday, I think, announced that Jerry Conway, the co-creator of Punisher, passed away at age 73, I believe, which, awful tragedy. By all reports, I don't know that we ever interviewed him, but by all reports, a fantastic guy. I certainly noticed in 2020 when he came out, he did a op-ed in The Guardian, if I remember correctly, talking about the Punisher, where he was pairing with people of the Black Lives Matter movement, being like, everybody is completely misunderstanding the Punisher and what he stands for and what he's supposed to be about. We're going to take the symbol back. And, you know, even beyond anything else, like seeing all of these stories that were popping up over the past couple of days since he passed away about him. He was part of like a role play game group and he was 50 years older than anybody. He was like, they were like, you don't have to do this. And he was like, you're going to have to kick me out of this group. And that was, I think that was Jody Hauser put up that story. Gail Simone was talking about, which I did not put together at all, but her story in the Spider-Man Superman thing, Power Girl and Punisher. Yeah. Jerry Conway created Power Girl and the Punisher. And that's why she did it. It was a tribute to him.
I didn't know that either.
So beyond anything else, like he did the Punisher, he created so many other characters from Jason Todd to Vixen to, I'm forgetting a million others. He did the Clone Saga. He also did the night Gwen Stacy died, so many other things. So the comic book industry would not be the same without him. And again, I know it's a tonal swerve from reviewing a Punisher book to talking about this, but I felt we would be remiss not to mention him.
RIP. Thanks for all your great work, man.
Yeah, really. This guy was a creative engine and just a giant nerd his whole life. And that's what's better than that?
Yeah, I remember when they redesigned the Punisher logo and trying to kind of take it back. I bought one of those shirts. It was a pretty cool idea, and I was glad he was trying to stand up and make a difference.
Yeah, it's great. He will be missed. Why don't we move on then and talk about Feral number 22 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Tris Forstner.
Tony Fleece and Kennedy.
Tony Rodriguez. Now, big spoiler here from the last issue, but along with the feral cats who are being held in a CDC facility and experimented on, the stray dogs are also there. And so this issue and presumably the next, I want to say 3 issues after this, are going to be flipbook style, most likely. Half of it focusing on the feral cats, the other half focusing on the stray dogs. What do you guys think? Feral strays. Stray, whatever, I don't know.
It's heartbreaking right now because they're stuck in cages and being tested and turned into zombies and all sorts of crazy stuff. So it's not looking good for our cats and dogs. But this continues to be edgier seat type kind of fun twists and turns. Maybe fun's the wrong word. It's more scary than fun sometimes. But I've been... very much enjoying this story and continue to do so.
I would love to be tested, you know, really put through my paces.
Really? You want to volunteer for the Super Soldier
program? It works out sometimes.
Yeah. Whenever I pass by a hospital, I'm like, what can you guys inject me with today?
Yeah. Bring it out. A lot of times they'll have some loose juice you can toss in the old veins. I think this is, I like the very unfussy dive into Stray Dogs here. It's like we had a reveal in the last issue, and it's just like, hey, now we're telling this story. Now this is part of this. And I think it's such a smart move from Tony Fleece and crew. So I think it's good. It feels like they are really mirroring each story pretty strong. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how they're going to divert in the next issue.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I love where this is going, and I love the mythology they're building up about this disease. I don't think this will happen, but I almost felt like reading this issue, like, is this leading up to The Walking Dead? Like, are they going to, at this point, stealth make this into a Walking Dead prelude because we never found out what caused the zombie
plague?
What
a reveal!
That would be absolutely nuts, but, like, given... Tony's done stuff like that before in local Mad, so I don't know. It's not outside the realm of possibility, but this is cool. I love the directions it's going. They continue to push what this title can do. Wonder Man number 2 from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, who is going to be on our live show next week. So be kind, fellows. Art by Stefano Raphael, Mark Buckingham, and Or Jimenez. Wonder Man is investigating a mystery in Hollywood, kind of working with, kind of working against Hellcat, though more working with in this issue, while dealing with his brother and an old friend of his who is in some big trouble because of some murders. We find out who might be causing some of those murders by the end of this issue, but there's probably more twists and turns to come. What'd you think about this?
I love when this book is so fun when it's doing Hollywood stuff. And we get a lot of that here in this one with, like, there's a fun self-tape. There's, like, the therapy session in here and what happens when Wonder Man meets up with his brother right after that. Like, I love all that. And that is, like, reminds me of the classic Wonder Man stories from the 90s that I really responded to and why I love the Wonder Man character. So it feels like that's what this book is going to really lean into going forward. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, Wonder Man is not my guy, but, you know, I think this is still fun. And, you know, art is great, and I like the kind of villain spot, so that's kind of a cool use of spot here, so digging that.
Yeah, I thought the spot was great. I also want to give a shout-out to the art. I love the differing art styles here. I thought Mark Buckingham, of course, did a great job on the flashback sequences, but Stefano Raphael looked really nicely for the present sequences. So going back and forth between that, I thought was very cool. Excited to chat about this with Jerry. A Quiet Place, Storm Warning, number 2 from IDW, written by Phil Hester, art by Ryan Kelly. Now, I got to warn you, at no point in this book does any character say this is a quiet place, but there's a storm warning, which is pretty sad. But at the same time, I don't know. They still got a couple of issues to go, so hopefully they'll bring it together that way.
Fingers crossed.
But we are following a small town based on an island in the Mississippi who is beset by the monsters from A Quiet Place. This issue, everything goes wrong. We're following two different timelines, one where they've all fallen down and one character is trying to save a young girl. Meanwhile, in the past, her father, if I remember correctly, is trying to steer a boat to try to save the island and stop what happens. Obviously, is unsuccessful, as we see that they've already taken over. I think we really dug the first issue. How do you think it held up in issue 2?
Yeah, I think this is cool. You know, I'm not really a fan of The Quiet Place as like a kind of a horror movie. I like talking and being loud. But I thought this was cool, and like, you know, the monsters are scary, and they do a great job with like communicating the tension. This is very kind of tense. Will they make it? They're in the boat, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think they do a great job of, you know, getting the tension across, and it's a kind of crazy adventure. And I feel like if you liked this property, you will like this very much. And if you don't, you might like it, because I wasn't a fan, but I was still kind of won over by this comic and the art.
I thought the first issue was a little stronger here. There were some really interesting local politics things going on that were very surprising and felt very relevant to the modern day. This is a little bit more of an action issue, but the good news is the action's pretty good in both the past and present scenarios. It's very driving. You really feel for the people. The monsters are drawn pretty horrifically by Ryan Kelly. So that's all solid stuff. Even if I thought the first issue was stronger, I'm still on board with the series.
Well, so, it feels like this was purposefully like the more of the action, the split focus action issue. I do hope they get more to some back to more of the storytelling that they had in the first issue, like you're saying, because that was really the depth, the character depth was set up well going into this, but I want to get back to that to see where we're going to end up.
Yeah. Next up, Uncanny X-Men number 27 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Luciano Vecchio. And oh boy, so much is going on in this issue. Now, I've been saying for the past couple of issues that I think Uncanny X-Men is the X-Men title. It's just getting better all the time, and in particular really kicked into high gear in the past six, seven issues or so, something like that. This arc is finding the kids, the outliers who the X-Men have been taking care of, lost seemingly in time. They are now the New Mutants. That leads to another twist involving the present timeline and some other characters who show up at the Louisiana house. But at the same time, we're also going over to Gray Malkin Lane for Gray Malkin Prison, excuse me, for a bit of a hint about what might be going on here. There's been a tease of a character called Prisoner X who has been held at Gray Malkin Prison for a while now. It looks like we're finally going to find out who they are next issue, and they seem to be the cause of this time travel mix-em-up madness that's happening. I'm really intrigued. I love this. What's going on. I'm as lost as anybody else, but that means you're in the same place as the characters, but everything is firing on all cylinders here, and I'm very much on board.
Yeah, I agree. This is fun. It's a little weird at times, but it's enjoyable. I like this team. I like what's going on. I don't know what's happening, but I'm still having a good time with it. We get inside some characters' heads, which I know JT Sizzle loves, so I feel like this has got a great team behind it, so I'm excited to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and I mean, Gail Simone is just exploring so much. Like, it's a full, every issue of this is such a meal. Like, we get to see a lot of X-Men history in this in two different directions, not spoiling the twist at the end, both past a sort of twisted past into
the twist
present.
Is fun at the end.
And then the Gray Malkin prison stuff, like, this is a storyline that was established so hard at the start of the Ashes part of the X-Men continuity we've been in for a bit. And it's been sort of just sitting there. And so I like that we're coming at it and almost from the bad guy side, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. At least we're calling them the bad guys so far. That's nice. And I'm glad we're paying service to that part of the story because there's so much dangling right now with all of the X universe.
Also, I don't know what this probably says more about my brain than the storytelling, but taking the outliers and sticking them in New Mutants costumes and having them kind of talk a little more like they're out of a 90s comic. I feel like I finally get these characters after 27 issues. Like, it's just, it's a little cleaner and more understandable.
Well, they're built like a 90s X team. They're like, have their power sets are very different. Their personalities are very different. And they just don't have that organizing presence leader because that's what the Uncanny X-Men were. But it matches the 90s because the Professor X was the leader of all these teams. Because
Dream, Moira McTaggart. And then, later on, there's this great thing where I think we could spoil this just because it's fun, but it doesn't seem to matter much. Professor S shows up, who is Sauron in a Professor X suit standing there. Crazy stuff. Really fun.
And there's a strange emphasis on Professor X's yellow floating chair at the beginning. That I was like, what's happening here? Gail Simone's playing with a lot of the iconography here in a way that there's a deeper meaning here that she's not revealing to us yet, but I'm really excited to track it.
Yeah. Very excited to see what happens to the next issue of this. Let's move on, talk about Final Boss, Masked Vigilante, number one from Image Comics, written by Tyler Kirkham, art by Leon Govender. This is a spinoff of the title Final Boss, and it is about a vigilante who is masked and rides a
snake. There's a mask. There's
and
a
I'll
mask
tell you what.
There.
Kills more people than the Punisher, if you can believe it.
This
that
was the best Punisher comic of the stack.
It was. Cool cover. Tons of action. Plus,
I could feel you salivating on this when
yeah,
I was.
Yeah, plus the knife guns. I mean, come on, dude. Guns with the knives on the bottom. I mean, that's just brilliant. That's just a great use of your mag
sharp.
Right there.
Don't drop it.
Well, you shouldn't drop them anyway. You know,
that's what I
off.
Use. Like, I have in my drawers next to my forks, I have guns with knives on them, and I use them to cut all my food.
I still remember the Fraction Punisher run where the Punisher shot bullets and they turned into little knives and they stabbed you before you got shot. So that's fun. Yeah. But
probably at the same time, technically.
Yeah.
You think it hurt more because it was stabbed first?
Yeah.
And then
oh,
also...
definitely. It hurts more if you get stabbed with a knife than just a kind of a round cellular object.
I actually think the roundness would be worse.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll do some
tests.
We'll
test it. We'll do like a Mythbuster thing.
But here's the thing. The worst thing to be shot with would be like a Super Mario Brothers bullet bill. Because that thing.
That would just take the wind out of you. Come on.
Yeah, it's got punching gloves. No, that would go right through you.
No, they way.
Go,
the punching
I don't
gloves.
Think so.
You never seen Rocky?
What if I had eaten a mushroom? Then it would just make me smaller, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. We got really off track here. This is
We've
a great
all
comic.
Eaten mushrooms. We've all eaten mushrooms today. Just
this comic is a ton of fun, tons of action, really over the top, great in all the right ways, and the art's cool.
If you've been hankering for a real mash-em-up between Black Widow and the Punisher himself, this comic is literally just that.
Yep. All right. Wolverine, Weapons of Armageddon, number 3 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Luca Maresca. This is the other Road to Armageddon book as Wolverine teams up with David Colton, the Captain America of the 2000s, I want to say, who has heart problems. And also there's another Wolverine who can make claws all over his body, who has an origin box, and he's taking it to Prime Warrior, who's trying to track it down. Now, the origin box, as we all know, is going to set up what happens in Avengers Armageddon, while over in Captain America, the thing with Red Hulk and Mad Varia sets up the other side of it. And Wolverine's about to make a big decision in the next issue that's going to really change everything.
Wow.
Also, some lady dies.
Oh, man, yes. Dude,
again,
some lady, jeez.
A lot of characters where it's like, everyone's like, oh, no, Patricia, Patricia died.
Patricia!
Patricia from Accounts, she died.
Yeah. You love this guy.
No, so, the cover makes me nervous because it looks like Wolvie's and Trubs here. So, this is a bit over the top, but it's fun, great action. We got some flashbacks and people dying left and right. But this is more about kind of the program versus Wolverine as much. So, there's a lot of twists and turns here. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen, if this is all going to be worth it.
Can I say I don't like this cover? And I don't like this cover because the position Wolverine is in, it looks like, so for anybody listening on the podcast, there's the silver dude they're trying to track down who hasn't worn this costume, but I guess gets it eventually, is holding Wolverine up and impaling him, and Wolverine just sort of limply kind of lying there on his chest.
He's kind of hunched over on all the spikes that are going
through. Yeah, but he's clearly like lifted him up, unless his legs have gotten longer, Pete. So he's lifting him
Did
up.
Did he grow?
Yeah, maybe he grew. Maybe he finally went through a growth spurt. Maybe that's what the implication is. The way that he's lying there doesn't make a lot of sense with the fist. Also, there's not a lot of action from Wolverine. And also, just in general, like, does anybody see a cover like this? They're like, oh, man, Wolverine's going to die.
This feels like a trading card.
Also, like, Wolverine is so heavy. The fact that this guy is kind of one arm lifting him up is kind of insane.
It just, I don't know, there's something about it that logically doesn't make a lot of sense to me, like a lot of this book.
I mean, this villain, who we haven't seen in this outfit, is on the cover, and then he's on the preview to the next issue, and in both this outfit, he's not in the book at all in this outfit. And again, this is the lowbrow complaint, and I would layer the same lowbrow complaint from Cap. There's so many people who look alike in this who are just like, I'm here to help, dead. I'm here to help, hero. I'm here to help, random. And I'm just like, guys,
who's the large Duke roll shows call? Up the end? He doesn't even have his Duke tattoos. Oh, I was like, is that Duke? I think that's Nuke.
I think that's Nuke, but you can't tell without the
face. But he also
looks
like this guy on the cover, and he also looks like maybe the guy who died and also David Colton. So
that's
Wolverine, to the credit of this book, Wolverine looks different.
Yeah, it's true. I can spot Wolverine, especially even on this cover.
They really should have called this series, Can You Spot Wolverine? And then I'd be like
Where's
I can.
Waldo?
Yeah. Oh, fun.
That's smart. I mean, same idea from the Cap issue. Like, there's a much larger idea here, but we're in the middle. We're in this like setting up part. And it's hard when there's not a core idea to this individual series. It's literally just building toward a much larger thing that will have a core idea. And I just wish this had a little bit more animating besides like getting a group together where half the people die and half the people don't.
Yeah. Agreed. Hellboy in Love, Black Eyes, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Christopher Golden, art by Alex Nieto. In this issue, it's time for Hellboy to meet the parents as he goes home with the girl he's sweet on, in love with, you might even say. Yeah. And, of course, they run into some supernatural beasties, this time in the form of ghosts. I've really been enjoying these Hellboy in Love one-shots and two-shots and series. This is a sweet relationship. It's fun to see this side of Hellboy. It's some classic Hellboy adventures. Just, you know, good old times.
Is it fair to say this is Hellboy's Gwen Stacy?
That is a yes. I think that's fair.
It does have this weird kind of undertone of like only a monster can love a Yankees fan. But I do think that
Pete, a late stack hot take over here.
Yeah, it's just she's always got a Yankees fan hat on every time we see her, and I'm just like,
does that make you mad?
Is that a dig? Is that a dig? I don't know what it is.
The real monster is the Yankee fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're a Yankee fan, Pete.
Yeah, maybe I am. You know what I mean? So I just think that this is. I like a love story, and it's great to have Hellboy kind of back and doing stuff, so I'm here for it. I felt like they, you know, were in love pretty quick. You know, this relationship came out of nowhere, but he only had a couple issues, but it won me over by the end. At first, I didn't trust it, but now I feel like she's good for him, so I'm feeling good about it.
This was a very sweet story. I know I've perhaps been on the lowercase c complaining side about all these Hellboy series, but the in love stories I really like. This is the sweet. There are two couples in this, and I really like the interplay there. Too. There's some great the ghost story of it really nice. But I will say they're
creepy
putting
as
a lot
fuck,
of
dude.
The black eyed girl. You mean
yeah.
Or the Yankee fan is creepy. Why? Because she's like back in the. Because she's like more of an 80s. She's like hoping for Mattingly to really crush.
Oh, wow. Dude, that's an old school reference right there, bro.
Well, this is an old school. This takes place in the past.
Yeah, it does. It does.
But what I was saying is there's a lot of dread at the end of this put on, like, oh, yeah, they're in love. For now. I was like, okay, comic, what are we getting at? We're going to get some horrifying end to her, I feel like.
Yeah,
because this character was created after a lot of the Hellboy stories we know, so there has to be something to erase her.
Yeah. We shall see. Last but not least, Wiccan, Witch's Road, number 5 for Marvel, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Andy Pereira. We have been following Wiccan struggling with his identity, bonded with the Demiurge, which, if I got this correctly, is like a spirit of Earth, a Gaia-type thing. And meanwhile, his husband has been turned into a little marionette puppet. His friends and family are coming to help save him against Baba Yaga and also kind of Morgan Le Fay, who is sort of helpful but sort of not. I thought this wrapped up really nice. I really like this series. I think Wyatt Kennedy really gets these characters very well. And he's going to be writing the Pride special that is coming out towards the end of next month that is also going to focus on Wiccan and Hulkling. So excited to check that out.
Well, and especially I love where this ends with them in the Baba Yaga like chicken house. Yes. Just like, let's run around Earth and be weird and do magic, I think is really fun. So like that leading into a future story is a great spot.
When you said Debbie Urge, I thought you were talking about people who are addicted to Little Debbies. But yeah, this is great. And
I was. That is what I said. Yes.
That's what we're all into is you got that Debbie urge.
Yeah. You're like, man, I could go for a Little Debbie right now. I think the art's fantastic. Great characters, great story. This is kind of touching and cool in a lot of different ways here. And, great twists and turns, just really solid.
Good Kate Bishop in this issue also. You don't get to see, like, I'm just happy to be here. Like, that's not usually her character mode, so it was fun seeing that as well.
Yeah, great letters page, too.
Great letters page. And that is it for The Stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
Sure do.
Come on down. We'd love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time,
we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Classic Krang.
Krang ever.
Turtles. Quick PSA. If you're struggling with Debbie Urge, can we prescribe you a hot dog pills? Hot dog pills.
Yeah, hot dog pills. They'll cure your Debbie Urge. Once a week, they'll blow your mind with their comic senses. And extend their already extended auto lessons. At a comic book club. Comic book club. Comic book club. Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let their special guest speak. So grab your inhaler, don't be late for it, cause their girlfriends can barely tolerate it. Comic book club, comic book club, comic book club, comic book
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.